Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the wilderness of Kodiak Island, Alaska, this is Murder and Mystery in the Last Frontier with your host, Robin Bearfield. In a land full of peril and vicious animals, humans are the most dangerous predators of all.
Gary Zeager, a brutal serial killer, stalked the streets of Anchorage in the early 1970s. We'll never know how many people Zeager killed, but eventually, the psychopath made a fatal mistake. Welcome to Murder and Mystery in the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Robin Bearfield, and I'm broadcasting to you from the heart of the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge on Kodiak Island in Alaska. During the period when serial killer Robert Hansen terrorized Anchorage and South Central Alaska, another brutal murderer roamed the same area. While Hansen selected and hunted his prey, Gary Zeager used women and men for his momentary satisfaction and then simply discarded them. Zeager seemed unwilling or unable to control himself and was sure to self-destruct. When two hikers discovered the body of Celia Beth Van Zanten at McHugh Creek State Park, south of Anchorage, they knew she had suffered a horrible death. Someone had gagged her and tied her hands behind her back with speaker wire. Her body was naked below the waist. The pathologist later determined Beth had been raped and her chest slashed with a knife. She was still alive when she was either thrown or fell into a ravine. She apparently tried to climb out of the steep-walled crevice, but with her hands tied behind her back, she had no way to pull herself up the cliff, and she repeatedly fell until she froze to death in the frigid December weather. Investigators discovered tire tracks turning lazy circles in the parking lot of the campground, and they deduced Beth escaped her attacker, ran down the steep slope, and probably fell into the ravine. Her abductor circled the parking lot, waiting for her to reappear, but when she never did, he finally left. Beth disappeared on December 23, 1971, while walking from her house to a local convenience store. What happened during her short walk down the street? Soon after the hikers discovered Beth Van Zanten's body on Christmas Day, 18-year-old Sandra Patterson, the daughter of an Alaska state trooper, came forward to report her abduction on December 19th. Sandra worked as a prostitute to support her heroin addiction. She was working in the parking lot of the Nevada Club in Anchorage when a man pointed a gun at her and told her he would kill her if she didn't do what he wanted. She described her attacker as a slender man in his mid-20s, wearing horn-rimmed glasses. The man drove Sandra to a motel on the Kenai Peninsula, nearly 100 miles south of Anchorage, and raped her. On the drive back to Anchorage, he threatened to kill her if she reported him to the police. Sandra complied with his demands to remain silent until she heard about Beth Van Zanten's murder. And then she knew she had to come forward and tell the authorities about her abduction. Police asked Sandra to study a book of photos of known sex offenders to see if she could pick out the man who had kidnapped and raped her. She immediately identified her attacker as Robert Hansen. Hansen's photo was in the book because he was awaiting the trial for the attempted kidnapping of a young Anchorage woman. Hansen was initially charged with kidnapping and raping Sandra Patterson, but prosecutors considered Patterson an unreliable witness, and the charges were eventually dropped. Meanwhile, nothing tied Hansen to the murder and abduction of Beth Van Zanten. And to this day, authorities remain unsure whether Beth was murdered by Hansen, by someone she knew, or by another brutal killer named Gary Zeger. Police knew about Gary Zeger. In 1970, a young man's girlfriend urged him to tell Anchorage police detectives what he had witnessed. The man confessed he had been riding a Zeger's truck 6 months earlier when Zeger picked up a male hitchhiker. Zeger asked to borrow the young man's gun and then drove to a secluded area, placed the barrel of the weapon against the hitchhiker's head, and forced the hitchhiker to perform oral sex on him. Zeger then shot the hitchhiker and threw his body into a pit at the Anchorage landfill. Investigators used a metal detector at the dump to find the empty rounds from a 9mm pistol. Their next step was to see if they could match the markings on the cartridges to the barrel of the young man's gun and substantiate his story. An officer drove to the man's apartment to collect the weapon, but while he waited for the warrant to arrive, Zeger appeared at the home, went inside, and then left a short while later. Officers were never able to locate the pistol in question, and with little evidence and only the eyewitness testimony of one individual, prosecutors declined to press charges against Zeger. 2 months after the discovery of Beth Van Zanten's body, 18-year-old Shirley Ann Jones was seen leaving an Anchorage nightclub with a man. The next morning, her body was found in a truck yard on the east side of Anchorage. She had been severely beaten and raped. She was alive and unconscious when found, but she died a short time later. In August 1971, ZZ Mason decided to hitchhike from her home to an auto body repair shop to pick up her car. When she didn't show up at work the next day, her boss contacted her family, and when her parents called the repair shop, they learned ZZ had never retrieved her car. 6 days later, children playing in a gravel pit near the intersection of Sand Lake Road and Diamond Boulevard found the body of ZZ Mason hidden under a tree. She was naked below the waist. According to the medical examiner, ZZ's face had been brutally beaten and she had suffered numerous stab wounds. At the gravel pit, detectives found blood and drag marks leading from a set of tire tracks to ZZ's body, suggesting she had been killed elsewhere and dumped in the pit. The unusual tire tracks gave investigators their first lead in the case. The tracks were made by the heavy tread of tires used to gain traction in mud, snow, or soft sand. But what made the tracks unusual was it appeared three of the four tires had been mounted backward. A gravel truck driver called the police and reported seeing a young woman hitchhiker who matched the description of ZZ Mason climb into a pickup truck with two men. The driver said he saw the same truck later parked at the back of the gravel pit where ZZ's body was found. The second time the driver saw the vehicle, only a man and a woman were in the truck, and they appeared to be kissing. Ralph Kiner called the police to tell them he was riding with Gary Zeger the afternoon ZZ disappeared. Kiner said Zeger picked up a young woman hitchhiker and then dropped off Kiner near an Anchorage fire station. Kiner reported Zeger had a large knife on the dashboard of his truck. Gary Zeger's boss at Arctic Pipelines, Inc. said another employee reported seeing Zeger washing his pickup at Campbell Creek on the day of ZZ's murder. Police found the unusual tire tracks near Campbell Creek and felt they were making progress in the investigation. Let me take a short break. The audiobook of my novel, Massacre at Bear Creek Lodge, read by Beth Chaplin, will be released any day now. Beth does a wonderful job, and I want to share a sample with you.
Sarah reminded herself to be careful. She unsnapped her holster and put her hand on the butt of her gun. Although they had little information, Sam Lutz sat near the top of their list of suspects in the horrific murders at the Bartlett's Lodge. She approached the cabin from the side, eased along the front of the small building, and crouched under the one small window. She knocked on the door and stood to the side, hand firmly on the revolver, still in its holster. She waited as seconds and then a minute passed. She knocked again, harder this time. Perhaps Sam was out in his boat or off on a hike. This didn't seem like hiking or boating weather, but Sam Lutz had chosen to live in the wilderness. Perhaps rain and wind didn't bother him. When Sam didn't answer Sarah's third and then fourth knock, she thought perhaps she should walk to the edge of the cliff to see if his skiff was on his running line. First, she reached down and turned the doorknob. The door swung open. But why wouldn't it? Sarah doubted Sam's door even had a lock. Why lock your door in the middle of the wilderness? Bears never knocked before entering, and they were rarely courteous enough to use the door. Instead, they broke through windows or walls. Sarah warily stepped into the small cabin. She pulled her gun from her holster, on high alert for an ambush. She took in the small kitchen with one glance, but she saw nowhere for someone to hide in the tiny alcove. She looked up as she entered the main room. The darkened loft concerned her. She listened but heard no sounds. Her eyes dropped to the main room, and she slowly scanned the perimeter. When she reached the table and chairs to her left, she gasped at the sight, and the gun began shaking in her hand. She held her breath and quickly backed out of the room. Sarah put her hands on her thighs and bent her head toward the floor. She forced herself to breathe evenly for several seconds. She should have brought another trooper with her on this assignment. You can do this. You're an Alaska State Trooper.
The audiobook version of Massacre at Bear Creek Lodge will be available soon at Audible and on Amazon. Since the sand pit where the children found ZZ's body was outside the Anchorage city limits, both the Anchorage State Troopers and the Anchorage Police Department investigated the murder. Troopers obtained a search warrant for Zeger's truck and noted three of the wheels were indeed mounted backward on the pickup. The interior of the vehicle had been cleaned, but investigators found small spots of blood in the truck, including a smear on the inside of the driver's door. Detectives arrested Zeger and held him at the state jail on $75,000 bail. In the era before DNA analysis, lab technicians tentatively matched the blood smear in Zeger's truck to ZZ Mason's blood type. Due to the excessive press coverage and public outcry over the murders of Beth Van Zanten, Shirley Ann Jones, and ZZ Mason, the judge ruled an impartial jury could not be found in Anchorage for the Zeger trial, and he moved the proceedings to Kodiak, a town on an island 250 miles southwest of Anchorage. Concerned about the influence of news coverage surrounding the trial, the judge ordered the jurors sequestered in a hotel where they could be isolated from news reports. Zeger's lawyer, John Larson, admitted that on the day ZZ disappeared, Zeger picked up a young woman and drove her around in his truck, but he claimed Zeger dropped off the woman a while later. Larson said Zeger was unsure whether the woman was ZZ Mason. Analysts determined that the blood on the door of Zeger's truck was human, but they could not definitively match it to ZZ. An expert testified the other blood stains found in the vehicle belonged either to a human or a high primate, but he could not determine the blood type nor the sex of the donor. He also could not testify to how long the blood had been in the truck. An FBI lab technician testified Zeger's tires were similar to the casts made from the treads left in the sand pit, but he wasn't certain the tires on Zeger's truck made the tracks in the sand. Zeger's boss, Michael Beaver, retracted his statement about Zeger washing his truck in Campbell Creek on the day of the murder. Despite a large amount of circumstantial evidence, nothing directly tied Zeger to ZZ's murder. The defense put three witnesses on the stand who claimed they saw ZZ alive and well several hours after she supposedly climbed into Zeger's truck. Finally, Zeger himself took the stand and calmly denied harming ZZ Mason. The jury deliberated 6 hours and returned a verdict of not guilty on all counts. One juror said Zeger might be guilty, but she and the other jurors did not feel the prosecution proved its case. After the jury acquitted Zeger, he returned to his job at Arctic Pipelines, but he failed to stay out of trouble. And the Alaska State Troopers and Anchorage Police kept a close eye on him, knowing he would kill again. Zeger aspired to join the Brothers Motorcycle Gang. In Anchorage, the Brothers had recently merged with the Hells Angels in Alaska. Zeger hoped to gain admittance to the inner circle of the group. But with his explosive temper and violent tendencies, there was little chance he would ever be anything other than a probationary member. The Brothers yearned to get involved in the lucrative business of strip clubs and massage parlors in the Anchorage area. These types of clubs blossomed after work began on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline, flooding the state with an abundance of young, well-paid men. The motorcycle gang thought they could siphon off some of the profits and perhaps even control the flow of dancers into the state. Gang members contacted club owners and demanded the owners pay them protection money. Jimmy Sumter was one of the club owners the motorcycle gang approached. Sumter owned two clubs. One was the Sportsman 2 in Muldoon, and the other was a larger club called the Kit Kat Club, a few miles out the old Seward Highway from Anchorage. Sumter turned down the gang's offer of protection and told them he had no desire to deal with them. A short while later, someone broke into the Sumter's house, murdered his wife Marguerite and his stepson Richard Merck, and then set the house on fire. A grieving and enraged Jimmy Sumter vowed to find the man or men who had killed his wife and stepson. And according to a rumor, Sumter put the word out on the street he wanted the killer or killers dispatched as soon as possible. Sumter might have suspected members of the Brothers Motorcycle Gang, but some members of the gang thought they knew who had murdered Marguerite Sumter and Richard Merck. The police had no doubt who had committed the murders and arson. Although Zeger had been acquitted for the murder of ZZ Mason, the Alaska State Troopers believed Zeger was a vicious killer who would soon murder again. Major Walter Gilmore ordered his troopers to keep an eye on Zeger. On the evening of November 25, 1973, Trooper Myers called Major Gilmore and told him he was on the way to see a movie with his wife when he spotted Zeger driving an unfamiliar truck. Myers quickly wrote down the license plate number of the vehicle. A few hours later, not far from where Myers had seen Zeger, someone murdered Marguerite Sumter and her son and set the Sumter house on fire. While interviewing neighbors, police questioned a woman who lived across the street from the Sumters. She told detectives she'd been up late on the night of the murders and saw a strange truck parked along the road in front of the Sumter's house. The truck made her nervous, so she wrote down the license number. The number she recorded matched the plate of the pickup Myers had seen Zeger driving a few hours earlier. Police knew Gary Zeger shot Marguerite Sumter and her son, but they were not sure why. The killer stole $20,000 cash and jewelry from the Sumter house, so robbery appeared to be the most apparent motive. Zeger was also trying to gain admittance to the inner circle of the brothers' motorcycle gang, so perhaps the murders were an effort to impress others in the gang. Zeger had recently been convicted of stealing dynamite in Cordova, and the high-priced attorney he hoped to hire for his appeal demanded a $10,000 retainer before he would handle Zeger's case. Zeger did not have $10,000, so investigators believed he broke into the Sumter's house to steal the cash. It was no secret that Sumter kept large sums of money in his home. No matter why Zeger broke into Sumter's house and killed his wife and stepson, Zeger made a big mistake crossing the players in the hardened Anchorage underworld. Within a matter of hours, motorists discovered Zeger's body near Potter's Marsh along the Seward Highway. A shotgun blast to the chest had ended his life. After Zeger's death, police solved another Anchorage mystery involving Zeger. On the evening of August 22, 1973, Anchorage resident Johnny Rich disappeared. Rich had recently purchased Cindy's Massage Studio in Anchorage, and Wesley Ladd felt he had been double-crossed in the deal. Ladd believed he owned a portion of Cindy's, but Rich did not agree with his assertion. When Rich's 16-year-old pregnant wife and his 15-year-old daughter contacted the authorities to report him missing, police immediately suspected Ladd in his disappearance. However, with no evidence, they had no cause to arrest Ladd. A few months after Zeger's murder, police arrested a heroin addict named Benny Ramey for receiving and selling stolen property. Ramey told police he knew where Johnny Rich was buried. He proceeded to confess that Wesley Ladd had hired him and Gary Zeger to kidnap Rich. They then drove Rich to a remote cabin where Ladd attempted to force Rich to sign over Cindy's Massage Studio and his other properties to Ladd's attorney. When Rich refused to sign, his captors put a clamp on his testicles and squeezed until he autographed the documents. Ladd was prepared to release Rich, but Zeger shot Rich in the chest. The shot did not kill Rich, so Ladd shot him in the heart, and then the men buried Rich near an abandoned coal mine. Authorities don't know how many people Gary Zeger killed, but some believe he murdered at least a dozen individuals. Did he murder Beth Van Zanten? Police found wire similar to the wire used to bind Beth's wrists in Zeger's house, but a definitive match could not be made. A composite sketch made by witnesses who claim they saw Beth with a man on the night she disappeared resembles Zeger, but the observations were tenuous. One of the most shocking details about Zeger and his reign of terror in Anchorage is that when he was found dead near the Seward Highway with a shotgun blast to his chest, Gary Zeger was only 20 years old. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you to my patrons for your support. Check out the show notes for more information on how you can support this podcast and unlock extra episodes by joining the Last Frontier Club. If you haven't already done it, be sure to join the Murder and Mystery in the Last Frontier Facebook group and chat about the podcast. I'll see you soon for the next episode of Murder and Mystery in the Last Frontier.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.